Welcome to the Ayahuasca Parents Podcast.
All right.
Well, hello, Mr. Joel.
Sorry, everyone, that started liking our podcast.
And then we went MIA.
We disappeared. I think it's been 6 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. It's February, and we meant to do a podcast. I think it was like the end of December.
Yeah.
And then January, but just like everyone else, we were getting our asses kicked.
Yeah, you know,
is that fair?
No, it's totally fair. Like, I think one of the interesting things, right, when we started going down the plant road is we started paying attention to moon cycles and astrology and things like that, because it very much adds.
Consistent with some of the lessons that we're learning, you know, from within, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, without getting into specifics, you and I were having some relationship issues right around Christmas that just so happened to coincide with a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse.
Yeah. Well, and my zodiac's Leo.
Yeah.
And I'm very sensitive to anything of the sun. So there was a full solar eclipse going on the other side of the earth from where we're at. And it just kicked my ass, and it really all came to head on Christmas.
Yeah.
It was a really bad day, but I have to really quick, so that nobody thinks I'm being negative here, that like, I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
I'm just so effing grateful right now for everything that has come up in the last 6 weeks.
Well, I think, you know, props to us, because when we have, you know, when relationship gets a little weird or tense, or, you know, it's kind of cool to look back over the last 5 years and you can say that we're definitely getting better every time something comes up, you know, and definitely able, I think we're growing.
Yeah.
So
it's always interesting how, I think we did a podcast where we were talking about, you know, how far we had come as a couple. And it's interesting how you always think that you've arrived. At least for me, I always battle with my ego where it's like, oh, I've arrived. And I love how, you know, source, universe, God, whatever you want to call it, the I am, the all that is, you know, like sometimes loves to push those boundaries and really just make it better. But there's always this kind of death rebirth thing, at least since we've started taking plant medicines, you know, it seems to be very cyclical. And I've realized through the last 6 weeks that in our relationship, well, in everything really, that anytime you get to a point where you're like, okay, I've arrived, that's really just another platform for another level of learning, you know, or another foundation for an additional perspective, you know, that will just, you know, help us, you know, grow individually, you know, grow as a couple, as a family. Yeah. So, but it was really intense, and a lot of it had to do with, well, let's be real. Like, I'm the one that was like, I don't want to live my life like this. I want to live. And we were headed in a trajectory where it's just not where I wanted to be. I want to live a life of adventure and fun and evolution. And
well, I mean, as long as we're being real, I mean, you know, for several months, I pretty much was putting myself in this like inside prison and just not doing anything, you know? And it's funny too, because sometimes you get depressed, you know, or sometimes you life sucks, and you can definitely flip the perspective, or you could find something that you need to learn from or improve, or, you know, you can figure out, you know, what do I need to see here? Or you can play the victim. I did a good victim, you know?
Sometimes though, that's necessary, you know, for you to see like unhealthy patterns or behaviors or, you know, just things that are not serving you well in your life.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really wonderful process in hindsight, because sometimes when it's happening, obviously it's really difficult sometimes to, you know, find the beauty in it or to feel grateful about it. But, you know, in hindsight, that's such a beautiful thing, and something that is a side effect to working with plant medicines, and I think specifically ayahuasca. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and you know, it was that, you know, it was that that PDF we were reading about that other sanctuary, right? That really talks about what you're getting yourself into when you decide to take a plant medicine.
Well, it's the hero's journey, which anybody that's studied any sort of, you know, ancient religion, it's, you know, brought up over and over and over.
Well, it's kind of like, it's really this agreement that you're going to continue to work on yourself. Right.
Right.
And, you know, and sometimes, at least for me, I mean, a lot of times, you know, I'll feel content and then I'll just stop.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then it goes backwards, you know? And it's, you know, it's funny is like every time when I can feel myself going down this dark hole and I'm like, I know what I need to do to get out. And then mm-hmm. I don't do anything. At the end of the day, I think if you ask anyone, you know, do you want to improve yourself? Do you want to improve your life? Do you want to improve your relationship? Everyone will say yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I mean, my perspective is that you don't go backwards, and you never like it when I say this, but that you're doing it perfectly.
Yeah, you know? I don't like it when you say
but it. But it's true, and that goes for everybody. You know, you actually can't undo and or go backwards.
Right.
You can resist, which just creates more pain.
Yeah.
But even in the resistance is where you learn things about yourself, or you're aware of things about yourself that you otherwise, you know, wouldn't be. And sometimes we sit there for days. Sometimes we sit there, you know, for weeks or months or a year.
Yeah.
But it's happening exactly how it needs to happen and perfectly. You know, you really can't fuck this up. That's my two cents. Once you have made an agreement with the plant medicines and you agree to expand consciousness and to heal at whatever pace, you know, that is, there is no going backwards. You might have times where you're like, fuck it, I'm going to, you know, almost like self-deprecating, like, well, I'm going to perceivably go backwards and do all the things that, you know, that I in the beginning, you know, set out not to do.
Mm-hmm.
But even in those moments, you know, like, for instance, you know, when I was healing my alcoholism, I basically did that. You know, there was a time where after I had taken Wachuma the first time, you know, I came back and all of a sudden I was drinking a lot more than I had been drinking, you know, for the previous couple of years. That was really important. It was really important. I wasn't fucking up. I was doing it exactly what I needed to do to see exactly what I needed to see.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, for instance, again, for me, drinking again was pivotal. Drinking again after Wachuma was pivotal for me to see really why it was that I needed to drink, or I was coping with alcohol.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so, like, a lot of times I hear people that come back from plant medicine experiences and they have these incredible perspectives and they're like, I am never going to, you know, pick a coping mechanism again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say anything to them. I'm just like, that's great, you know?
Yay.
And then a month later, six months later, you know, I relapsed. It's like, you didn't relapse, you know, you're doing it perfectly. You know,
and sometimes you have to sit in your own shit for a minute.
But the plants have this way of giving you a perspective, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you come home and you integrate it. And then those desires of wanting to cope in that way come up again. And most of the time, people then satiate the coping.
Hmm.
Now, the cool thing about that is, see, now you're armed with new perspectives. At least that's what happened with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you an ability to see it completely different, you know? For me... I stopped using alcohol when I became incredibly grateful for alcohol. I realized that it kept me alive for 10 years.
Yeah.
And
it's a cool perspective. You know, I wish more know, people would kind of see it the way you saw it.
Well, it just opened up my heart and it made me realize how grateful I was that was my coping mechanism and not a bunch of other different kinds of coping mechanisms I could have chosen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the more we talk to people about this and the more retreats that we do with people, you know, the more you see other coping mechanisms and it makes me grateful for the one that I chose, even though it nearly killed me or it saved me. It just depends. That's the coolest thing about healing and about your personal healing is that you can choose to believe whatever perspective you need to believe
mm-hmm.
to make it okay in heart, inside of your heart, whatever that is. And you don't need the validation of anybody else.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So some people don't like that. Like some people don't like to hear, well, like I did such and such, because I hated myself so much. You know, people don't like to hear that you're taking full accountability sometimes.
Yeah, we like to play the blame game.
Yeah, we really do. Yeah. You know. I don't, that last part was probably a little disjointed, but you know what I'm talking
you
about.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what I've learned, you know, I've learned so much. 2019 was a really rough year, and I don't think I've talked about this, but the end of July, beginning of August, we found out that my stepdad was a pedophile.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in our life for 22 years, and we also found out that that he had victimized one of our children.
Mm-hmm.
And if that wasn't bad enough, we found out that my mom knew, and that
she kept it from us,
and she's known this whole time.
And they've continued to watch our kids,
right? And yep. And all of my siblings' kids, and it destroyed me.
Yeah,
like. All of these spiritual concepts that I had been collecting, all the downloads, you know, all of my plant medicine journeys.
Yeah.
None of it fit. It was like I couldn't make it feel better.
Yeah, you had to mourn.
Right. And I grieved. And that's what I realized was I was crying daily, every day. I was a mess. And I kind of adopted this, you know, fuck spirituality type thing. Like, it doesn't work. Like, here's a real life tragedy that's happened. And there's nothing that I've been able to find or you know, kind of conjure up from the wisdom that I thought that I believed that fits with this kind of grief. And then I realized that I'm human. And I realized I was learning something about emotions, but it didn't make it. None of it made sense in the moment. It all makes sense now. And I'm so grateful.
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized was it was time to just grieve. And I cried. I cried and I grieved and I was self-consumed with it. And then I experienced rage and anger. You know, the gamut of emotions was intense.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until about the first week in December, I think that's about when we started the podcast, right? Or maybe it was a little bit before. I don't remember.
Somewhere November, right December. After the Thanksgiving, oh, before, okay. Christmas. Somewhere in there, yeah.
That I realized I had a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And once I realized I had a choice, I realized I was done grieving, and it was a relief.
Yeah.
And then everything kind of came to head. You know, you and I are awesome for each other because we're so comfortable at this point. We have a partnership where we know that we're mirrors for each other. We know that we're reflecting things back at each other and we're projecting.
Right.
And most of the time we're capable of handling that.
Yeah.
Some of the time we just want to push away because it gets so intense. And this is what happened at Christmas. We just wanted to push away. Like, fuck it. Nope. I'm done. You're done. It was just a real big,
yeah,
you know, pushback that we had. And so we took some time and a little bit of space and kind of sat in our own energy. And, you know, we were both, I think, just kind of going inward, like what kind of boundaries do we need to set? What kind of life trajectory do we want to set? But the biggest aha that I had was that just like I'm in control of what my mind chooses to think about, I'm in control of how I feel.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, other people might be realizing this and going like, you're just coming to these conclusions. Yep. Yep. I am. Like, I felt like your mood happens or feelings happen, that mm-hmm. there is no choice.
And that sometimes people are making you feel a certain way.
Yeah. Or even like, oh, the juxtapositions of the planets and the alignment, the eclipse.
Yeah,
you know?
We're always looking outside of ourselves to figure out why yeah. something's happening or why we feel a certain way without looking at ourselves.
Yeah. And so I realized, oh, wait, my emotions are a choice. That there's a space that I can go
mm-hmm.
where it, like a buffer space where I go where there's no emotion, where I can really sit there and choose how to feel, what emotions I will feel.
Yeah.
And that's really conjured up by the perspectives of my mind. And that's a choice. And then to add to that, because there's always a body, mind, physics part, or spirit, whatever you want to call it. I realized that not only were my emotions a choice, but that everything physical, like everything physical is an emotion, everything emotional is physical. That is really, when you think about it and you think about frequency becoming vibration, like cymatics, you know, I was like, whoa, that was really powerful for me. It was a huge aha moment.
Yeah.
For me. And then I also realized that I'm in another one of those awkward spaces or spaces where I realize I just don't know anything, you know?
Again.
Yeah. But I'm okay with that because every time I let that go, that I think I know something, you know, I can tell you what I know now or what I think I know now. But every time I legitimately kind of let go of the belief that I know, something really cool happens. It's like then I get more perspectives, and I don't ever want that to stop. And I think that was another thing too that I came to the conclusion of, is I just want to be doing this kind of work the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. It's hard.
Yeah.
And it's difficult, in particular when you find a wound that you didn't even know you had.
Yeah.
And kind of getting on the ledge of the wound to jump into it, you know, knowing that you don't know how deep it is and you don't know where it's going to go and you don't know how painful it's going to be, but you know that when you get to the other side, you know, there's going to be the antidote, and it's going to subdue, you know, something within you that's going to help you on your life path and trajectory.
Well, I mean, so for people that don't understand what it means to be doing the work because they haven't taken a plant yet, what does that mean?
Well,
if you had to describe,
yeah, I think it's, you know. I think it's a, well, I think doing the work means opening up to receiving perspectives that, you know, mainstream, you know, mental health or mainstream, you know, allopathic doctoring, don't promote. I mean, I think it's, yeah. I think doing the work means that you're willing to open up and to see all of the dark places.
Yeah.
Those dark places are powerful teachers. I mean, to be an exceptional human, you have to embrace all of your dark places.
I'm just coming to this conclusion.
Well, like, I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, I'm finally to the place where I'm like, you know, when I really sit down and think about personal goals and then like couple goals and then family goals and, you know, just I'm like the main denominator in all those is in order to accomplish everything I want to accomplish,
mm-hmm.
I gotta be the best version of me, you know? And that means that I have to take, you know, all these kind of lessons that get thrown at me. I gotta take them seriously, mm-hmm. and I gotta be active. And at the end of the day, by being serious and being active and actually doing the work, the accomplishments, you feel better. You feel better becoming the best version of you.
Yeah. And it requires your participation.
Active participation.
Yeah, active participation. But, and,
you know, cause again, just not to cut you off, but like what people I don't think understand is like our former shaman would say, you know, 1% in the cup, 99% what happens after.
Yeah. In fact, we got into a great conversation with somebody yesterday at a business meeting. It was the weirdest thing. And
talk about it. Cause that was fun.
Yeah.
For us, you know,
well, we were realtors. That's what we do for now anyway, it's for work. And so, Joel had a listing that hasn't moved in a while. And so he offered to have it smudged because it works sometimes. And so I love smudging houses. I went over to the house. We're smudging the house, you know.
We're using a sage stick.
Yeah, use sage stick. I'm like,
high frequency smell.
I'm like,
folks, happiness.
Singing a little bit of an Icaro. And then I get done and I'm like, okay, yeah, we're done. And we had like a simple conversation. She's like, one last thing. She's like, you mentioned something called ayahuasca. And I was like, did this just happen? Like, I just smudged your house, shifted the frequency in it. And we're talking about ayahuasca. It was brilliant. But
which is funny because I've never mentioned anything to her personally.
Right, you know, just her husband. Partner. Oh, yeah. Now it's her husband, yeah.
Yeah, but and yeah. It was several years ago. So, you know, the way the plants work, right, is they call you in a way.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All of a sudden it starts coming up into, mm-hmm. well, they always call you.
Yeah.
That's the thing is if you're meant to work with plant medicines, well, most likely if you're listening to this podcast, you're meant to work with plant medicines, like surprise.
Yeah.
And that's just because it just keeps on coming up into your awareness, you know?
Yeah. You're actively searching for ayahuasca podcasts for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's a good shot she might find this one. That would be pretty funny, huh?
That'd be great.
But it was a great,
be really cool.
I totally lost my train of thought. I don't know what I was going to
say. No, but it was a good conversation because basically here we have a person that, again, I think I mentioned ayahuasca to her husband 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I've known these people for a long time, 5 years, I think. And, you know, she was like, yeah, I wanted to, you know, I heard you guys mention something about ayahuasca and the, what was cool is first of all, you know, she's not really wanting to talk about what she's dealing with, which a lot of people don't, you know, you feel shame, you feel you're embarrassed, you just don't want to let, and it's not like we're homies. So she doesn't want to let these strangers know. And you opened right up and you started talking about where you are at and then kind of the steps you took and then how you ended up at your first ayahuasca ceremony and then what it's done for you. And just by opening up, she started to open up.
Yeah.
And then you're sharing similarities, you know, you're sharing your story, which has similarities to her present.
Right.
You know, and you can almost see the hope, mm-hmm. you know, get bigger in her eyes. Like, okay, I'm definitely thinking about this and it's probably going to be what helps, you know?
Yeah, well, there's no shame. There's absolutely no shame in sharing your story.
Nope.
And I know how that is because you're grown up, you're raised, most of us are raised being told not to talk about certain things and definitely not the pain or the trauma, you know, don't be a victim, be a survivor, that kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and I see it very differently. I unapologetically now talk about my story and have embraced it because it's my story. I went on this retreat one time in Sedona with these people that turned out to be kind of wackadoodles, but the older gentleman, I was sharing my story and he turned to me and he said, oh, you need to change your story.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt immediate shame. His name was Kirk. I felt immediate shame and embarrassment that I had opened my mouth. And my takeaway from that is I will never, ever be a part of making someone feel less than like that about, you know, the trauma that they've been through.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to know that, well, first of all, you're always safe sharing that with me, you know, but number two is that you shouldn't be ashamed of it. That's your story. And there's something there for you to see that only you can see.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're ready to share it yourself, you know, to help other people, you know, I remember how hopeless I felt, how I felt like I was a victim to my alcoholism, how I was a slave to alcohol, how I was a slave to obesity, how I was a slave to a whole bunch of things, you know, and I know I remember how it felt to have hope about plant medicines, but not being able to find any.
Yeah.
You know, and it felt really good to talk to her yesterday and to make her like, and I love complimenting people, telling them that they're remarkable for wanting real healing.
Seeking it.
Because
you know, she's seeking it right
because
now.
You are, if I could get a message through, you are remarkable for everybody that's listening to this for wanting to be better, you know, and to be more sovereign and, you know, to heal and be more of a contributing person to the greater good of humanity. And when we do the work, that's what we're doing. You know, we're plugging back into an ecosystem that we've been so disconnected from. We're plugging back into community, you know, to tribe. And it's all for the greater good of humanity. At least that is my belief for now.
Yeah, but I just think, I don't know. I'm grateful for that experience we had yesterday. First of all, I get to, we get to share something that worked for us to someone who's in pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
And looking for healing.
Mm-hmm.
And second, it's always a quick reminder of where I was at.
Right.
What I've been through, where I'm at now. Am I done? No, not done.
Yeah.
Won't ever be done, really. It's just kind of a life. It's a life path that you'll just kind of, I mean, the thing is the more that you expand and the more that you, you know, your perspective's changed, that you see life in a different way. It just gets better.
It really does.
These are the conclusions I finally came to. I did, like, why am I resisting? You know, for me, I don't do a lot of things to take care of myself. I mean, you know, I shower and shave and I smell good and, you know, but
you work out.
I work out, but like, you know, I'm not a meditator. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people that can sit, meditate, silence their mind, and then, you know, get some good ha-has. That's not me. I got to breathe, mm-hmm. you know, which is exercise, or, you know, doing the Wim Hof breathing, or, you know.
Which is, I think, another form of meditation.
Absolutely.
So it's hiking.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, that's why I've been, I mean, the you know, like I told you yesterday, it's been awesome having a new dog or having a dog.
Yeah.
You know, because he needs to get out and exercise. And it's like, even when I'm having a shitty day, it's like, well, I gotta go take Cubby out, or he's just going to, he's going to be an asshole. So, but what happens when I take him out? Then I'm basically doing a 5-mile meditation.
Yeah.
And I just come back fixed.
Yeah.
You know, it's the thing about it is what I've learned is don't cling on to any beliefs, right? Because even when I have ahas now, mm-hmm. I'm going to have a deeper aha about the same subject at a later date.
You got to remain completely flexible.
Yeah.
And in the, like, Tai Chi, Qigong,
yeah.
You know, practices, that's exactly what they talk about all the time. It's about being flexible, this mind flexibility, the you know, even the yogic practices, you know, your body flexibility.
Yeah.
And also there's a spiritual physics flexibility there, of course, you know.
Well, and this is kind of a little thing that we've done that's kind of helped us keep our head straight, but, you know, maybe some other people need to hear it, is we're really being aware of the negative inputs, you know, for, like, social media right now, especially when politics are, like, I don't even know.
Insane.
It's retarded.
It's, like, insane.
I don't even know what's going on there. And so it's like, why am I looking at that?
Right.
It doesn't make me feel good.
Well, and look, what we found is by not looking at it, the world did not self-implode. Like,
no.
What we found is, well, first of all, when we're on our phones a lot or on technology a lot, so are our children, and it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I don't like seeing my kids.
So be better examples.
Yeah. And so there's that. But how, I mean, my imagination, my creativity. I mean,
you're
like,
dreaming.
Oh my gosh, it has gone through the roof, and I've just enjoyed it.
And looking at social media is like watching The Curse of Oak Island, or watching, you know, one of these shows where it's like every 5 minutes they tell you what just happened, right? And so you watch an episode, if you haven't watched Curse of Oak Island, just ignore this. But, you know, it's like they show you a hour long episode that's really only 20 minutes of content, because they're spending the whole time, they're like, you know, found an artifact in the swamp, blah, 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 blah.
On Oak Island?
Yeah. And so, like, that was the one thing I noticed about the politics of just cutting it out for a week. I did a solid week, no cheating, except for on the last day, because I wanted to see what was going on. But you know what I noticed was I got caught up in an hour rather than spending 4 hours of reading the same shit over and over and over every day. You know? And the not having the negative inputs, I guess what I'm trying to say is there is no point. So realize that. And the what you gain from not having negative inputs, the dreaming, the creativeness, the spending more time with family, the just general good mood, being able to work out, you know, just walks, you know, I mean, it's been
great.
It's been huge.
And because then you're connecting to nature, you're connecting to other humans, you know,
you're more present.
You're connecting to yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the big ahas, I was reading a book, and it was talking about following through with the commitments that you make to yourself.
Yeah.
And the agreements that you make to yourself. And I thought, you know, I'm really horrible at that.
Same. Like, yeah.
I'm really good at keeping the commitments that I make to other people, you know, to you, to the kids, to my clients. But when it comes to myself, for some reason that's optional. And I'm like, why is that?
Yeah.
You know, now, of course, like, you know, of course, self-love. I mean, you can really wrap everything up into, well, it has something to do with your self-love. You know, but I've really made agreements, you know, with myself and held myself to some, because right now I'm in the pocket for ayahuasca. So I leave for ayahuasca with our oldest daughter, who's 19 in 10 days. And so mm-hmm. I'm, you know, doing the plant diet, the ayahuasca diet.
You can't go into it because that's next episode.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, because I think that deserves a whole episode of mom and daughter going to the jungle together.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of beautiful...
Yeah, it's anyway. It's been intense, but yeah. and the prep and just kind of everything coming to head with my body and
yeah,
you know. And so anyways, I finally had, it was like the universe really made me focus on some things about my body that I think I've been resisting.
Yeah.
And I finally did something about it and I made a commitment to myself. And we'll talk about it, I guess, next time. And I followed through,
Can talk about your detox if that's what you're.
Yeah. I just,
it was motherfucking impressive.
Well, I came across this gentleman named Dr. Morris, yeah. M-O-R-S-E, and he lives in Florida. He's a biochemist. He's incredible. And I've learned a ton about the body and, really what what's going on when the body is perceivably sick. It's not really sick. It's trying to detox. And anyways, I know way too much now about the biochemistry, the immunology, the physiology, clearly the anatomy of the body. And it's really helped me. But I noticed that I needed to start doing some of these detoxes. The body is, or I should say, the body is an incredible detoxifier. And when set up, when you feed it the right things, mm-hmm. and you work with botanical medicines, which I love, so an array of non-psychoactive botanical medicines, it activates kind of this natural detox that your body can do. And so I don't know, 4 years ago started doing these, detoxes and working with botanicals. And I stopped short of a bowel detox and a lung detox because to do a bowel detox, you basically have to go on a food vacation for 2 to 3 weeks. And you're drinking a lot of teas, some botanical teas that Dr. Morris sells at a really great cheap price. And then you're getting your nutrition through, filtered juices. So I'm doing a cold pressed juice. That's how I'm getting my nutrition. But the idea is you shut down the digestive system to give your bowels a rest so that the epithelial cells inside of the bowels take anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks to regenerate. And really and truly, it's to allow the bowels to heal. So if you have any, any sort of, they call them intestinal or villi crypts, or any kind of like what you would call an abrasion, sores, that type mm-hmm. of thing. And, 70% of our immune system is in the bowel. I mean, your micro and your intestinal villi they're like these finger-like projections, and they literally have your lymphatic system, your nervous system, and your cardiovascular system right there. I mean, it's all three of those massive systems that, plug and play with basically whatever it is that you eat or that you put into your body. So any of your chemicals or medications or drugs or food.
Yeah.
And anyways, I've suffered from all kinds of
leaky bowel and
almost like an IBS, kind of thing. but that has a lot to do with my medical history. I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but basically I've struggled with it my whole life.
Yeah.
And, so I've made these commitments before, but it's been really hard to keep my mood in check because not eating for 2 to 3 weeks is really difficult. At least it has. It's been for me in the past. So
yeah.
I basically neglected myself in 2019. I wasn't very kind to myself. You can still be, you can still be vegan and eat a lot of junk food and sugar. And I would say that I did that and it didn't serve me very well. And I knew that, my body really towards the end of December was shutting me down. Like my body was like, you're going to focus on this and you're going to take it serious. Otherwise you're going to have some massive issues. And so I made a commitment. I'm like, okay, well, I guess I will do this detox and I'm going to do it for, 2 to 3 weeks. And I did. So I went, 2 weeks with not eating, eating. And, I drank all of, I would peel some aloe and I did aloe ginger, in the morning with some water. I was doing hibiscus tea and lime because it's great for magnesium. I was taking Epsom salt baths, I was trying to sweat as much as possible, mm-hmm. but there's an energy thing because you're not getting a lot of calories. And so, but anyways, it had the results that I was looking for after 2 weeks. And then I went to eating, basically the diet for ayahuasca a week early.
Yeah.
And now I'm in the pocket. So 2 weeks before ayahuasca, you don't eat any processed foods. You're not eating any dairy. You're basically not eating any meat. I'm not, you know,
salt,
no salt, no caffeine, no spicy foods. This particular sanctuary doesn't want any ice cold drinks, ice cream. I'm trying to think about what else. Basically any processed, no oils. So basically it's like, you know, raw vegan. But
with the exception of some cooked rice.
Yeah. I mean, here's the advantage is I'm a vegan cook and I'm really good. So
yeah, you got some good hacks.
Yeah. And so I have, you know, like lemon and, you know, this is a great lead up. Like, what am I eating right now? Right. Or do you want me to wait until
I'll just talk? I mean, I think we should do a whole episode on what it's like to prepare and get ready to go.
Okay.
You know, well, to Peru. We'll do it another time. I also think at some point, you know, because, you know, there's probably other people out there who are like, well, my guts hurt, you know?
Yeah.
And we could have a whole conversation on how to heal yourself with botanicals. I mean, because, you know, without getting graphic on what exited your body, you knew without a shadow of a doubt that you finally reached the gunk that needed to come out. Right.
And yeah. Well, and I felt like my body was actually talking to me.
You had physical signs that everything was working.
Yeah. And then I started to like be directed, like just how my downloads work. It was like, I'd have something that I'd recall, like, oh, I remember reading something about celery juice one time. And then I started reading it and it had everything to do with what I was experiencing. So I did a few days of just like celery juice in the morning, green cabbage juice, which if you have not juiced green cabbage, oh my hell, it's so yummy. It's sweet.
Yeah.
Super, super, super sweet. And just the benefits for that, which has a lot more to do with not so much the bowel, but the gut biome and, you know, feeding the good, you know, bacteria, you know, fiber.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just a bunch of things that sort of plugged and played for me is why it was that I was having some of these other physical issues and it all led back to the bowel. And now I feel great. Like I haven't felt this way in years and I'm just so grateful again, like.
But you kept the promise to yourself.
I did.
Which is hard because you live with four other people.
Right.
At the time where we're eating stuff that you enjoy.
Yeah. Well, and I've been making food. And the thing is, because I am a vegan cook and I love food so much, like it's been, even though I've not been eating it, it's been fun to still make it. And to feed my family, because I love that. I enjoy that. That's part of my... And so I'm still, you know, making my minestrones, or I'm making the kids', you know, avocado toast, or, you know, their snacks or whatnot. And you've been awesome because you've been really taking over dinner for me, which has been really nice. Especially some of those days where I think it was like day 10 of my bowel detox. And I just had a mental breakdown, you know, which I knew I was going to have. At some point, it really made me focus on, you know, why am I eating what I'm eating? Why do I eat? And I think that, that was the biggest aha for me is right before I started the bowel detox, I realized that about 3 or 4 o'clock, I got the munchies because I was in pain. And I was in enormous amount of pain. And I think eating was helping to make me feel better.
Totally relate to that. And I don't know why it works that way, but when your stomach hurts and you eat, then the...
And lately I've been researching about circadian rhythm and how we should be eating based on circadian rhythm. So I've actually been playing around with that since I don't really have to have the responsibility of quote making dinner. Cause you've taken that.
Yeah.
And that's been amazing. So I'll drink a tea or like Ticino or something like that in the morning. And then, you know, I don't know, about 9-ish, 9:30-ish, I'm eating oatmeal, which is just basically plain, you know, oats. And then I cut up grapes and apples, put that in the oatmeal, cook it for a little bit, and then I add no salt peanut butter. And man, that keeps me really satiated until about 1:32. And then I've been eating my big dinner between 1:30 and 2:30.
Mm-hmm.
And what's crazy is I'm not even thinking about food again until maybe 5-6, and then I'm just eating fruit. And that's working for me. So when I'm back from ayahuasca, after ayahuasca, as you know, I have to go 2 more weeks on the plant diet.
Yeah.
On the ayahuasca diet. And then after that, I'm going to continue to do this. I think I'm even going to work it so that the kids, that we're all eating dinner, like right after the kids get back from school.
Yeah. I can, just watching my own habits, I can tell that that's how my body wants to eat. Mm-hmm. My brain is still in the 3 meals a day, 2 snacks in between the meals.
I know, but
I'm overeating.
But this is the brilliant part about kind of going back to our original conversation about doing the work.
Right.
Is that you start to realize that some of these things that you were told that you needed to do or everybody's doing was the right way to do it. You know, like 3 meals a day, 2 snacks a day. That's what you need to do.
Yeah.
Well, and then people wonder why it is that they're always hungry and that they can't lose weight.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about it, you know, this is what I always do when I'm considering anything that has to do with eating or medicine, right? I honestly go back to, well, how did people survive 100, 200 years ago? I literally don't think they were staring at a watch going, oh, I can't eat lunch till noon.
Lunchtime.
Yeah. Or the hunter gatherers, they're like, no, we need to go gather up everything, but we're not eating till noon.
Right.
It's a little retarded, you know?
I think naturally people ate based on the sun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, like, they did, you know, that's, yeah. And so that's why I started researching circadian rhythm and, you know, what does that mean? And, you know, so for me, that just, I mean, again, doing the work is you kind of start to see things that aren't serving you and you start questioning everything and then you start researching and then you're like, you kind of pattern your life after what's working for you. Now that might not work for somebody else, you know, because basically what I'm saying is I'm eating twice a day.
Yeah.
I'm getting all the nutrition I need. The results have been that I'm consistently and effortlessly, without counting any sort of calories, losing weight.
Yeah.
So I think I've lost about 20-ish, maybe a little bit more pounds.
But I mean, you know, going back to keeping the promises that we make to ourselves, I started off the year great. I had a good run of like 2.5, 3 weeks, you know. And then the first thing that I stopped doing as much as I was at the beginning of the year was just jotting things down in a journal. Which is, for me, it's just a notebook. What I've, you know, I spent some time thinking about this the other day when I went for the run with the dog, is I need, and some of the podcasts I've been listening to what other people do to keep the promises to themselves, is I need to write it down, and I need to make a list of what I'm doing every day. So I don't forget, you know, like for me, you know, I was consistently for about 3 weeks, even a little bit longer, having hibiscus tea, vitamin B12, and a vitamin D before I go to bed. Why was I doing that before bed? Because I noticed that I would get to sleep. I would sleep really good. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as life goes on, I, you know, go to bed at different times. I'm forgetting to that routine isn't stuck yet. And so I know that's an important part for me. So I need to document it. And, you know, I'm going to make myself, my own kind of journal that has like a checkoff sheet. You know, I was listening to a podcast with Rob Dyrdek, and that's what he does. And it really resonated with me, you know, like, you know, did I breathe today? Mm-hmm. How did I eat today? You know, cause I still have emotional eating habits, you know, and I'm sure everybody does, but I'd like to really conquer those. Mm-hmm. I'd really, because, you know, trying to get in, you know, I also had a good month losing weight, and I have goals for the year where, you know, it's kind of time not to consider myself a big guy anymore. And I want to be a skinny guy, you know, and to achieve that, I have to keep myself, you know, on track. But the other thing is by doing all these things, it gives me, increases my, it makes my mood better. You know, I feel better about myself. I feel better what's going on. And if, you know, like for me, you know, there, we have these business ideas and some things that we'd like to accomplish in 2020. And the way to make that things happen is being positive, you know, and being positive and taking care of yourself and being the absolute best you can be so that you can then, you know,
we have to resonate what I'm learning too. And I've known this.
And I really like that point that you're about to make.
Yeah. That, you know, you have to resonate at the vibration that you want to create in.
Yeah.
So if you're not resonating yourself in your human vibration, you know, in the vibration that you want to create in, then it, you know, you're creating dissonance.
Yeah.
You know, you really are. It's like, and you're going to sit there going like, why can't I make this happen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why won't this come into creation for me?
But it's
like, well, because you're yourself not, you know, keeping the commitments that you made to yourself. You know, we're so good at, like, with our kids, we're so good at taking care of our kids. It would never, ever occur to us not to do, you know, or help our kids with their basic needs.
Right.
Yet we're horrible.
With our own.
Yeah. Most parents, I think, are. It's like at the end of the day, it's like, oh, well, you know, I didn't get around to that. I didn't get around to taking care of me, yeah. You know. And I think it's time to really stop that. You know, we have to take care of ourselves first, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you say this all the time, right? Your reality is a projection from what's within, right? Yeah. And it's true.
Yeah, even though some people are like, I just recently, someone that we went to ayahuasca with, I won't call him out, but he was like, what I realized was that my reality is not a reflection of what's happening within myself. And I thought, God, I've been there with you, brother. Because, like, you get to a point where you're manifesting things because you are creating it. You know, when you really look at our quantum spaces and you really look at what we are, you are absolutely creating everything that is reflecting back at you. And we don't want to accept responsibility for that.
Yeah.
Because especially the things that are difficult, you know, like what we just went through in July, August.
Yeah.
I don't want to take responsibility for the fact that, you know, was reflecting back at me in my reality. But man, once you do take responsibility for whatever it is that's reflecting back at you.
Yeah.
That you've projected, that you've manifested, that you've created, you know, that's when you kind of, I don't want to say a level up, but that's when you really get to see some things about your power of creation. Like you get to actually, like, it's like, and it, for me, it feels like by taking ownership of it and accountability for it, that I have more control about it. I mean, probably control is not the best word. You could probably pick that apart if you want to,
yeah.
But that's how it feels to me. Like, you know, I've got choices. It's a better word, you know, not so much control, but I've got choices that I'm not a victim of this situation because I'm the one that created it for my own edification and for my betterment.
Yeah. Yep.
You know,
your choices all lead to your choices ultimately lead to the desired outcome.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're making bad choices, you probably need to ask yourself, why are you trying to achieve that outcome?
Yeah. I mean,
it's that self-sabotage sometimes that we do.
Yeah.
You know, but again, back to choices. Yeah. I mean, that's
take an active role. You hate it when I do that too. I'm like, well, that's your choice. And you're looking at me like, son of a.
Yeah. Yeah. Except for, you know, like I live with a very wise woman.
Oh,
and you thanks. Have lots of great advice and you've taken this plant healing journey very serious. And you're very active and you're constantly, you know, looking at things and, you know, you look at all the different fibers of your being and you're trying to self-improve. And it's like, you know, for me, I see what you've accomplished, you know, and I can see some of my shortcomings. And what I do is I look at some of the things you've accomplished and how you got there. And then I can apply that to the things that I feel like is a shortcoming for myself, but you know, nothing's permanent. I still have time to improve, right?
Yeah.
Until I'm dead.
Right.
And so, you know, I'll be honest, I feel like for the first time, I'm taking a very active role in, you know, trying to manifest what it is and who it is I want to be or accomplish or, you know, whatever, you know, for the first time, because I don't think, you know, I don't think I've taken it as serious as I could have or should have, you know, because I think sometimes it's easier to just live in that loop, right? In that Groundhog Day where you just keep having the same day over and over. But, you know, I'm at the place now where I look around and I'm like, this is the same goddamn day.
Yeah, you know,
I don't want to do this anymore.
The first time we went to ayahuasca, we took, you know, 4 cups.
Right.
And each cup, the lesson that I learned around each cup manifested into my integration life.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, I came back and I was like, I feel like I'm in my first ceremony. And then it was like, I feel like I'm in my second ceremony. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you know, what just reminded me of that was you were like, I'm taking it serious now. And it reminded me of after that first ceremony you had and you know, what you said in the talking circle. And you know, I really feel like, well, we've talked to other people that have experienced these same things. It's like, not only was, you know, like ayahuasca showing you something in the moment, but it was also giving you almost a manual or a guidebook for how to integrate and kind of what to focus on and concentrate on, you know, when you get back home. And this is why, again, it's very important that you don't just do one cup of ayahuasca. It works in freaking layers, and you need at least 3 cups of ayahuasca in 3 different days.
Yeah, it's, I was telling this to you know, our daughter the other day. Ayahuasca is a story. It's like a storybook.
It totally is.
You know, and depending on if you're taking 3 cups, 4 cups, 5 cups, because that seems to be the norm, right? A minimum of 3. I haven't seen anybody take more than 5, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know that there's some places in Iquitos where they do like 8. Remember, there was a guy that was there that first time.
Yeah. Well, even then, like, you have a beginning, somewhere there's a middle.
Yeah.
And there's a conclusion.
Yep.
And so, you know, anyone looking for a, you know, that's researching ayahuasca right now, you know, depending on where you live, I'm sure there's always a guy where you can go do, because I know there's one locally where you can go do a retreat, and you can, sometimes they'll just give you 1 cup. 1 cup isn't it, you know? You're looking for a place that has 3 cups, because you need to give time for ayahuasca to lay out the story so you can see what you need to see.
And it's once I made the connection that, okay, my ayahuasca experiences were also the manual for integration.
Yeah.
And I used it that way. And then I figured out, at least this is for me. Then and it's been helpful to other people, I think, to think about it this way. But then I realized that it was really showing me how to interact with my world, with my reality, with other humans. Yeah. Like, you know, it was also, you know, so much more. And I'm sure that I'll learn something more and something more and something more. There's still some things in that first experience that I had with ayahuasca. I have no clue.
This is the first time you've actually explained it to me that way.
Oh.
And so I'm sitting here thinking, I'm thinking about my first ceremony, and I'm thinking where I was at in like 2014, 15. And then I'm thinking about my second ceremony where I was at like 15, 16. And then I was thinking my third ceremony where I was like, more like 18, 19. And I think I finally just got out of my third ceremony of integration.
Mm.
And it's, you're spot on. You're actually you're dead right. Like, you can look at your ceremonies as kind of a diagram or an operations manual on how you're supposed to integrate everything that you've been shown.
Well, and the coolest thing is that it's personally for you.
Yeah, it's personally tailored for you.
And the way you do it and the way you see it is going to be completely different than anybody else. I have people all the time that will say to me, well, so-and-so's doing it this way and it's really worked for them and I don't resonate. It's like, great. Don't do that. Like, it's not for you. That's the thing, is that it's nothing that anybody else, like these coaches, you know, a true integration specialist is going to help you find out what you need to find out for yourself. They're not going to ever tell you what they're really doing. You know, they're going to help you decode what you need to have decoded. But what I was going to say really quick before I lose my train of thought was, there's like, you know, different frequencies and levels of understanding in each of your ceremonies of ayahuasca that, you know, like I said, give you clues for when you integrate, and you cycle through them.
Yeah.
You know, so I've cycled through those, my 4, you know, ayahuasca experiences, but there's still those things in, there's certain things in those experiences that I still have no idea what they're for.
Yeah.
That just means I'm not to a point yet in my own evolutionary process where it's time to integrate those things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
The strange thing is that I feel, like I almost feel like I'm about to go work with ayahuasca for the first time again. I don't really know how to articulate it, except for I just feel, and it has, probably has a lot to do with the experience kind of the traumatic experience we went through last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like part of that process of grieving tore down a bunch of maybe kind of false belief systems that I thought I knew were real, that turn out they're just kind of platitudes, spiritual platitudes, but they're not really real. They're not for me. They just, and I'm really open. I don't know if I've ever really been this open, sincere, focused. And I was pretty focused, I thought, the first time we went.
Yeah, but you're a different place. Mm-hmm. You're focused on different events.
I'm also not afraid.
Yeah.
Which this might be a shock, but I was afraid every single time I've ever taken ayahuasca 12 times. My heart would pound. I'd just be terrified.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until this last integration, the last couple of years. Well, really, it was that last. The last time that I worked with ayahuasca was like my third ceremony. And if I've already talked about this, I apologize. But I had a vision, which I don't typically vision. And it was of ayahuasca standing in front of a full-length mirror. She had beautiful red hair, white skin, freckled. She had on a green velvet dress with a gold cord around her waist as a belt. And she was standing right next to one of those kind of like, you know, 1920s full-length revolving mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just revolving it. And she goes, this is what I do. She's like, I'm a mirror. She's like, I'm not doing this. You're doing this. I reflect back at you, whatever it is that you need to see for you. And she felt like a sister to
so
me.
So true.
Yeah. She felt like a sister. And at that point I realized, you know, that everybody projects onto ayahuasca, you know, about what she is and who she is for them and, you know, what she does and, you know, this or that. And, I don't know. I was just really grateful for that. And that image just keeps on coming up. Like I'm about to go, I'm excited. I get to go, you know, work with my sister again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what is it that I need to see within myself, you know?
Yeah.
What's really my calling, you know? Like what, you know, do I have anything else inside that needs to be addressed as far as like, you know, wounds or pain, you know? The whole thing that happened with my mom and my stepdad, I wondered, well, are there other secrets, you know, other things that need to come out, you know? Like I'm looking for a little bit of resolution and so, but I don't think I've ever really been this open, sincere, surrendered, you know?
Yeah. Well, I didn't think I ever wanted to go back. I went twice and I thought, no, it's good. But I think I'd like to go back to have to participate with everything I already know.
Yeah.
You know, and that's essentially you have all this experience and you've already done all this work. And it's just, what's going to happen next?
I almost feel like all of what I've done the last 6 years has been prep
for this,
to take my first cup of ayahuasca, which is in the next 10 days.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds ridiculous. People are, you've already taken 12 cups of ayahuasca. Like, I kind of feel like this will be the first time.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I feel that way. I'm excited. You know, yeah. I'm a little nervous. But mainly just I'm excited. It's an adventure. It's kind of fun to travel down there and, you know.
Well, and it'll be, you know, with the struggles our, you know, daughter has had for years.
Yeah.
The fact that she felt like this is something she wanted to do and she's an adult now. And I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll be a great bonding moment for you to both go through it together.
I think so too.
And I think it'll be cool that she's going to have some massive healing. I just know it. She's a badass warrior chick. She's going to.
Well, I just, the irony of it, I got back from ayahuasca the last time in 2017 and I looked at you and said, I'm done working with the plants. I don't think I'm going to do that ever again. And I am done working with ayahuasca. And it's just so ego, right? Like, like my cute little human brain knows when I'm done working with the plants. And so funny, because it's like when it's time to go back, the plants will make sure that you go back. And I had a moment yesterday where I'm looking at you like, oh my gosh, like I'm headed, like what happened? Like I went from being resolved to I'm done working with ayahuasca to I'm 10 days away from going to ayahuasca again.
Yeah. Not, you know, and I don't know. It's just, you know, not everybody goes as often as we've gone, but then there's other people that go twice as much as we've gone. I think it's a personal thing. I think you needed to give yourself plenty of time to integrate the last experience. It's pretty big, pretty big deal. I mean, sitting in friggin' silence for 5 days.
Know. The plant dieta
is a big deal. And, you know, I think sometimes, you know, I think the big reason why I went the second time was I was stuck and I wasn't really integrating what I'd learned. I wasn't really making any headway, and it just felt like life was crashing in. And it was like, you know, it was like having a dirty window that got cleaned so I could see everything clear, you know? So it was very important that I went the second time. And
yeah,
I've essentially been integrating and working on what I've learned and what I was shown for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's sometimes it's a lot to dive through, and it's a lot to look at, and it's a lot to decide, okay, I'm ready to look at that and make the changes I need to make, you know?
Again, this is where your active participation is required, and you get to go whatever pace you want to go.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever that is, like it might be 10 or 20 years in between plant medicines, but maybe it was that you just really didn't want to actively participate, you know? And I've throughout the times that I've been to work with ayahuasca, there have been people there that have said, well, basically, you know, I haven't worked with a plant medicine in 10 years and the pain is just so much. They found themselves back with ayahuasca. And that's just they never found their flow. And you got to find your flow, what works for you, what you need to focus on. It's kind of an empowering thing when you realize that nothing that anybody else is doing out there is going to work for you, that you have to figure out what works for you and unapologetically then do that. You know, but there's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to be projecting what they think you should be doing or focusing on onto you.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times the people that are doing that are also attempting to make money, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's so definitely true.
You know, like the things that we've spent money on to try and figure out what's legit and what's not legit, you know, don't get caught up in listening to somebody tell you how you need to be. You know,
all the answers are inside. You just got to find them. That's what I've learned 100 times over.
Yeah, no, 100%, you know, I was thinking about it today. You know, I used to be a huge book reader, fiction, nonfiction, lots of self-help books, you know, two books at a time, you know, consistently. I would probably go through a couple books a week. And then we went to ayahuasca the first time. And I don't know, it was like it was shut down. It was like I couldn't comprehend a book if I wanted to. And it was just more research, you know, until just recently. And now I feel like I can read books again. But my point is that it was interesting because I would get these downloads. And then I'd talk to somebody and they'd be like, oh, my gosh, did you read so-and-so's book? Like, no. And oh, well, he talks all about this in his book. I'm like, nope, I just downloaded it from within myself, you know, or I'd be talking to somebody else. And they'd be like, oh, have you been studying Buddhic teachings? Nope. Have never even read a book about Buddha. But apparently I get a lot of downloads that are very Buddhic related.
Yeah.
And so like people love to tell me like, oh, well, you haven't read? Nope. I'm downloading this from within myself.
It's an interesting thing too, because I've been around and I've watched all this happen.
Right.
You know,
it is weird. Like,
you know, and I've experienced some of it myself as well as watching it happen with you. And you know, I don't know if I'm onto something or if I'm completely, you know, out there, but it feels like there are thought streams.
Well, yeah.
That are just there, and as you raise your consciousness or your frequency, whatever, you're able to go up and
access. Yeah.
Information.
I think it's just the expansion of consciousness in general. Yeah. So as you expand, you have access to, well, the way that I see it is you've got frequency, energy, vibration, right?
Yeah.
And the way I look at it is frequency is kind of a bandwidth. Mm-hmm. So anytime you shift perspective, you're increasing your bandwidth. And inside that bandwidth, you have energy, which I see are like the ingredients.
Mm, yeah.
And so like if you increase or expand consciousness, increase frequency, you have access to these little energy ingredients that you otherwise didn't have, that then you can use to manifest things into your vibration, which your vibration is what we think that we feel and we see.
Yeah.
And so... So I think a lot of the time it's connecting to, you know, that higher consciousness, that all that is. And when I let you know this, I like to really push my mind into infinite spaces.
Yeah.
I mean, like there's no way in my lifetime that I'm ever going to be able to actually probably access the frequencies of some of the infinite perspectives that I've downloaded, you know, it would be fun to do that. My brain might explode.
Yeah.
You know, but I try not to think about stuff like that so much. I try and just try and stay more present, you know, otherwise you can get, you know, caught up in into things that don't have really any practical plug and play.
You're caught up in the infinite thinking.
I love doing that.
Yeah.
I love doing that where you think as big as you can, and then you take all that and you package it and you minimize it to the size of an atom. And then you build on top of that a bunch of those kind of like cuboidal cells, you know, and then you take that and you package it into something as small as an atom. And then you stack on top of that, and you can do that forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just mind boggling, and I love it. And that all of that is inside of you.
Yeah.
In one of your atoms. And you've got 100 trillion atoms in one of your cells. So you have all of that happening to you in just one of your cells. And you have, you know, depending on who you talk to, you know, 40 to 60 trillion cells that are rebirthing and dying simultaneously.
I love it when you do that late at night to where my brain explodes and I can't go to sleep because I'm stuck thinking infinitely.
Well, one of my greatest curiosities is what happens when you have a human that is aware of that walking around, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, like what could you actually do if you were to finally surrender ego, you know, and identity? I mean, it could be pretty powerful.
Oh,
you know, Buddha says that a man with the right perspective could move a mountain. That wasn't figuratively,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then, you know, like people will talk about Jesus and walking on water or parting the Red Sea, that, you know, depending on who you talk to, that wasn't figuratively either. And happened in this sort of, you know, quantum time and space, you know, with the elements, how we have them right now.
Yeah.
You know, it really makes you, you really understand or think that how we are conditioned into believing things determines what it is that we can actually manifest into our vibration. And
yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why I'm so committed to the work. Not because I want superhuman, you know, human, you know, like Superman powers. Although that'd be really great.
I'm like, I'm okay with that.
It's not one of my goals.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that was a tangent. You're welcome.
No, it's fine. You know, another thing I was thinking about that, I like to put this out there in case anyone listening is, you know, doing their research to try to figure out what it's going to take to do ayahuasca and what's all involved with it, you know, is it's an observation that I was reminded of when, you know, basically our daughter signed up and was ready to go,
mm-hmm.
right? What's up with the plants? The best way to describe it is the plants start working on you the time you commit.
It's so true.
You're not even there yet.
Right.
And you're doing your pre-work, you know, because you take someone like her, part of her issues is she just stuffs things. Right? Doesn't look at it, doesn't address it, makes the commitment. We paid the money, made the commitment, and then the work just started.
Mm-hmm.
And the ahas she's having, and, you know, when she's thinking about, you know, some of the things that she's gone through, or, you know, thought about her thought, you know, her thought processes and her thought paradigms, and just breaking those down, like, what?
Well, I just love it.
It's fun.
Our shaman actually said that, like, the plants will start working on you. Even if you've never taken them before, they'll start working on you once you made a commitment to them.
Yeah.
And most of the really good, you know, sanctuaries, stateside or otherwise, will have kind of an intake document that you fill out, you know. And a lot of it is, you know, they talk about your intentions or your intent to work with the medicines. And I feel like this has happened to me every single time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, yeah, it's happening to you.
Yeah, I know. On steroids this time, which has been wonderful.
Yeah.
But it leaves you in a situation where you're like, okay, well, I thought I was going to ayahuasca because these were the things that I thought that were creating these issues for me. And now they're cleared up. Like, now I have resolution.
Yeah.
But it also, for me, even deeper, it makes me realize again, that sometimes what is in our awareness, this is why plants are so important, working with plant medicines are so important, is that sometimes what's in our awareness are just the symptoms. And we don't have the capability of getting into our unconscious or subconscious spaces without the help of these plant medicines that put you in a trance-induced state, which is really what happens in a different brainwave state, so that you have time to walk around in the subconscious, unconscious spaces and figure out why you're manifesting those symptoms. What is the core? And the plants are brilliant at doing that. Now, I had a meditation master tell me that, you know, he could do that. I said, well, how long did it take you to do that? Well, it took me 10 years to basically get to a place where I could do that. I'm like, but some people are going to be dead before 10 years. Basically, this person was upset because it seemed like that I had come to some perspectives in a very short amount of time where it had taken them 10 years to achieve that same sort of, you know, as they put it, enlightenment.
Yeah.
I think that's really, that's crappy thinking. And we should just be grateful that everybody is getting what they need when they need it, how they need it, instead of judging people for how they're going about doing it. That's a tangent. But I guess the coolest thing about, again, working with the plant medicines is their ability to help us find the core. And a lot of the times the things that we think are the core issue, like for instance, I thought my alcoholism was a core issue. That wasn't a core issue. It was a symptom of a bigger issue.
Yeah, it just goes back to, you know, like, I think alcoholism is my biggest issue. Well, why are you drinking?
Mm-hmm.
And then you come up with that conclusion. Well, why that?
Yeah.
And it just goes deeper and deeper and deeper.
It really does. Before you know it, you're thinking about your time and space in the womb. And then you're thinking about the ancestral epigenetic line. You know, I mean,
yeah,
like,
yeah, if you haven't looked into epigenetics, man, look at that. Can there's some things that everybody needs to, you know, take a look at.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It definitely some things there too.
Yeah.
You know, when that's the other thing too, is that a lot of the times, you know, when we get together and a big group of us start talking and sharing information, I think sometimes when you almost think that, oh, I haven't thought about that or I haven't researched that. And there's almost like this anxiety of, you know, like, you know, the FOMO thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I got to go get that book. Well, I got to go read that. Well, I got to research that. Well, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and next thing you know, you kind of find yourself on paths that have nothing to do with really your path. It really is because you think that for you to be able to contribute to the greater good of humanity or to a conversation, you've got to read all the books that everybody else is reading. You've got to lean into all the other things that everybody else is leaning into. And the coolest thing about when you find your flow is that you just pay attention to what comes up into your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And stop worrying about what other people have going on. Eyes on your own plate. Because there's nobody else in the entire universe that is looking through your eyes that has their brain connected. Their neuroconnective pathways aren't like yours.
Yeah.
You know? That have had the experiences that you have. That's what makes you divinely unique and beautiful.
Yeah. And if you focus on that rather than trying to copy what other people are doing, it's more fulfilling. Anyways.
Copy paste is going to create pain.
Yeah. That's my favorite part about, you know, when we've had these meetups with people that we've had, we've all done ayahuasca together.
Mm-hmm.
And just how unique and different everybody's perspectives are and you know, whatever, everybody's going through and going through it in their own way.
Yeah.
And what's cool is, you know, we're all getting from A to Z, but sharing all our different stories of how we got there, you know, because again, nobody's doing it the same way.
Well, I love listening to the words that people use to describe things that I feel like I know or that I understand. Yeah. And I love when they use the different words because it gives me a better understanding of whatever it is that I thought that I knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it for people to share like that, it's like petals on a flower. You know, we're all attached to the same, you know, source.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just a beautiful flaring of kind of the same understanding, but, you know. And not one petal is beautiful, but all the combined petals are really beautiful and fragrant. And, you know, collectively, we're just so amazing. You know, one of the things this year that I'm really, one of my intentions for this year is, you know, to be more soft. I think what happened the middle of last year really made me, you know, I hardened up pretty quick. It felt like everything was unsafe. I was worried even to have my daughter, our younger daughter, go out into the backyard. I mean, it was bad.
Our fenced in backyard.
Yeah. I mean, like our fenced in locked backyard. Yeah. And,
I know. I was there with you, but
I didn't want her to go over to anybody's houses, even people that we knew that she's been over there. I mean, I went psycho.
Well, if you can't trust your mom and your stepdad, who the fuck can you trust?
I know.
You know?
It was.
So it definitely breaks down all those feelings of feeling secure and having a tribe and, you know, people are looking out for your kids like you're looking at. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
There was a time and space where I felt very connected to a whole bunch of things that were a lot bigger than myself.
Yeah.
And I felt like I shut that down too. And that's another one of my intents is I want to
back up.
Yeah. I want to feel that again. I want to feel the magic of life that I felt before. I want to be softer and more open and available. And I'm reminded when I have lessons about my ego, how good it feels to have less ego, how good it feels to let go of that identity, the spiritual identity, the ego identity, whatever that is, and to just be more heart open, you know, almost in a sense like allowing the universe to work through me in whatever way it needs to work through me without having to label and define it constantly.
Yeah. Well, you've picked a great year to make all those changes because it's the year 2020. Yeah. And you get a whole year, I think, to put all the groundwork in on who you're going to be for the next phase in your life.
Look, I think I have a whole decade.
You think you got to? Not maybe. You know, like I keep saying, I'm going to make, this is the year I make all my wants stick.
Mm-hmm.
All the things I want to do stick.
Right.
Because I'm not going into 2021 with the hindsight 2020. That's not.
I know. I love that. When you told me that.
Not going to do
that. That was before anybody else was saying it, by the way.
Somebody else saying it?
Oh, everybody's talking about 2020 vision.
I got myself up to the new thought stream. We're all downloading that together.
You were saying that like a week, well, like right around Christmas time.
Yeah.
I was like, that's brilliant. Yeah, it totally is. 2020 vision.
I'm ready to take risks, you know, 'cause I like everything to be super calculated.
Yep, conservative calculated.
Yeah. I'm ready to take some risks. I'm ready for some big changes. You know, we both talked about how we're kind of ready to get out of our profession and, you know, I'm in my 40s, but that's never too late to start something new.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to throw a lot of shit at the wall and see what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just ready to.
No fear, man. We have we have the universe. The universe has our back.
Yeah.
And we know it.
No fear. And, you know, like Wim Hof says, feeling is knowing.
Oh, man. I love him. We've listened to a lot of Wim Hof. I don't usually like promote things, but if you have Netflix, you should watch Goop.
Hell yeah.
It's Gwyneth Paltrow's company, but the first one is about psilocybin mushrooms. And it was really great. The second one was about Wim Hof. We've watched that twice.
Fourth one was about some sort of body energy.
I think that was like the fifth one. The whole series was great.
Yeah.
I enjoyed all of it. And just, I kind of like the direction that she's going, which is her staff is R&D-ing a bunch of things that they've been, you know, that's come up in their self-improvement. Yeah.
Yeah.
A ton of healing.
The only thing I haven't watched Getting to Know My Vulva yet. So
I think it's important.
I'm not opposed to watching. I'm just saying, like, I haven't watched that one yet.
Yeah.
But,
I think you should, you should watch things that make you feel uncomfortable because I think it's good. They're a good perspective. I was uncomfortable with the title of it.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, I should probably watch this. At first, I'm like, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, maybe they have something to talk about. It was really great. You know, women's sexuality and the shame that we have for our bodies and the culture that creates the shame for our bodies. I was kind of mad for a day when I really started thinking about it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like,
but you know, I mean, sticking to going back to doing things that you immediately don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. A good example of that is our buddy Wim Hof. The breathing's fun. Don't get me wrong. Your body vibrates. It puts you in this like meditation. It does lots of great things for your body. It cuts down on inflammation. You alkalize your body. this oxygenation of your body where you vibrate is amazing. Mm-hmm. But that's just phase one of what he does.
Right.
Phase two is he gets you into the cold. Well, who the fuck likes cold, right?
Well, you learn to like the cold.
Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, like the cold showers and then just watching, you know, he does retreats where, you know, you go hiking, you know, what's that mountain? Kilimanjaro. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called in Poland.
Yeah.
Yeah. He lives in Poland, you know, so they do this like, you know, this, they hike up 6,000 feet, which is like, I think it's 6 miles each way or something. I don't know, but they do it in shorts and shoes, shorts and hiking shoes or snow hiking shoes. Cause it's in snow.
Right. Wow.
That's it. You know, you're, and some of them are wearing like their little, you know, tiny bikini thingier majingers and
Speedos.
Yeah. You know, you get the alpha males that are like, oh, I can do it. But you know, they did it.
Yeah.
And so getting to know the cold and I mean, so I'm starting to embrace, if I don't like it, it's almost like that's an indicator. You know, it's like yesterday, I didn't want to go get my fascia work done. And I'm like, ugh. And then it was like, wow, I just had a great session.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I mean, I think you bring up a good point in plowing through our fear programming.
Yeah.
As well as our victimization programming.
Yeah.
And doing things to challenge both of those things.
Yeah.
Bring about change in exponential quantities.
I was listening to this guy. I think his name was Kyle Cease, something like that. Mm-hmm. He's just, you know, he's a former comedian who's basically turned into kind of like a life coach or just kind of trying to help build people up. And he's just kind of sharing what he's been going through. And he feels like the year 2020 is to start having your personal growth is it's all about, you know, you're not going to live your best life until you're not scared of death. And mm-hmm. you're not going to have a lot of abundance until you're not scared of being broke. Mm-hmm. You know,
or whatever your biggest fears are, because yeah. some of us yeah. that like face mm-hmm. death on a daily basis when we were children, and wanted to kill ourselves, were never afraid of death.
Yeah. Like, yeah,
you know, but you know, we were afraid of connection and living.
Yeah. And essentially he yeah, was
find your fear.
Essentially he was yeah. saying, go seek out your fears. Now that we all have the same fears,
right,
essentially
right.
go seek out your fears
right.
and move past them, because you know, that's going to be your goal. You know, those things are pointing to what you need to work on for the year. And then you're going to get the growth out of it when you plow through it. And I felt like there's a lot of, I resonate with that. That's kind of my mantra for the year.
You know what that reminds me of my ayahuasca intake, questionnaire.
Yeah.
They asked, you know, what my fears are. My dumbass puts, this is, you know, just a few months ago, my dumbass puts, I think I've worked through all my fears. I don't know if I struggle with fear anymore. Oh my gosh. Could I have said anything more egoic, for real? Like, I'm a little bit nervous. That's what I'm nervous about. Like, why would I taunt ayahuasca like that?
The lady that was reading it was like,
okay. Oh no. Yeah. She's looking, she's like, and she's taken ayahuasca before. Like,
so she's crap. Got an ego death coming.
Damn Yay. It. I know. Oh, I can't believe I said that, but whatever. You know, my ego comes out when I feel really, really insecure.
Yeah.
And
same.
and unsafe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's really what the ego is designed.
Protection mechanism.
Absolutely. It's to protect us. It's what it's always done is to protect us.
Yep.
You know, and so, I mean, I can see that clearly now. I hope I can namaste my way out of whatever I got myself into.
Namaste my
please,
way.
Please don't let me see that.
Namaste. Like, love.
Now, the truth is I'm ready to see whatever I need to see.
Yeah.
And I'm not really certain I've ever been, I've never felt this way before, which is why I kind of feel like this will be like the first time that I've ever, like, this will be my first cup of ayahuasca.
To be fair, it's your first cup at a different sanctuary.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm nervous. It's 5 cups. I have a little nerves with the fact that I'm bringing our daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's a little bit of unknown there and just the unknowns in general, but it is an amazing place. It's called the Temple of the Way of Light.
Yeah.
And,
this particular session or week with ayahuasca is a woman's only retreat.
Yep. It's a woman's only retreat, which I felt like would be really good considering the topics we may or may not find ourselves talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And, even the shamans.
Yeah.
But it focuses on integration. And here's the thing is that I'm starting to see how the modernization of an indigenous ceremony is necessary for westernized minds.
Yeah.
And because we deal with things in our Western culture, this is very different than what the indigenous people dealt with.
So what you're saying is the guy, the hillbilly from Kentucky, ayahuasca.
Opened my mind. He expanded.
Was actually onto something.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He's absolutely onto something.
Anybody need something to watch real quick? Kentucky Ayahuasca on YouTube. It's amazing.
It's on Vice.
Yeah, but you can watch the first two free episodes on YouTube. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
But anyways, I really like this because my daughter's 19. I really felt the integration piece was really important and practical component. And so they have a ridiculous amount of support.
Yeah.
You know, what did I read yesterday? Like over 60 people.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are affiliated with maps.org, which I just can't say enough wonderful things about that organization. So
same. Well,
should
probably wrap it up. I think we already know what we're going to talk about in our next episode. We're going to talk about more about the Temple of the Way of Light, what you've done to prepare, what Kylie's done to prepare, essentially, you know, and what you know about the place and what you're looking forward to and, you know, go from there. I think it'd be very helpful. Anybody that's really close to, you know, picking a sanctuary is a personal choice, by the way. I don't think, I'll tell you where we went and I'll tell you about our experience, but I think you should seek it out, do your own digging around and make the best choice for you. I think most of these places, at least in Peru, have a similar, plan as to how to prepare. I mean, some are a little bit more intense, a little more detailed, a little more thought out, you know, like obviously, where you're going is sounds amazing.
They seem that they really, really care about your mental health going into and your mental health, after the experiences. And you have somebody there that's going to help you integrate after every single one of your ayahuasca ceremonies.
Yeah. This place, in my opinion, feels like they have a lot less, psychonauts that end up there.
Yeah. Well, and I have to say too, their preparation and going deeper manuals, I have never read anything like that before.
Yeah.
That was some of the coolest shit I've ever read. And I've read the going deeper manual about 5 times now.
Yeah. I've read it. Yeah. I'm like, I want to go here.
I know every time I read it, I learn something else and I think about something else.
Yeah.
They ask very poignant, deep questions to ask yourself about your intent, the difference between intention and intent. And we can go over that the next time we talk, but yeah, I really resonated with it. And it just feels like the place. Plus the minute that I saw this, this Shipibo shaman, this woman, I don't know, overwhelmingly, I have to meet her. I have to kiss her cheeks. I know that sounds a little crazy, but I'm like, I have to see this woman. I have to look in this woman's eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm super excited about it.
Okay. Well, let's not give anything else away. We, anybody that's, very happy to see that we have another episode. We're going to have many more.
Thanks for being patient. Yeah. With us.
You know, we're just humans going through our human life, trying to figure stuff out. You know, I was already thinking I'll probably do a couple episodes while you're gone.
It's a great idea.
Probably help me to, not miss, you know, my, my lady so much.
No.
And
I'm going to miss you too, since I have to check in my phone.
No, it's awful. Like,
and so I won't have
long
any
time wondering if you're alive.
Technology fast, no technology for 9 days.
It's going to feel so good. It'll feel so good. So, all right. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you on the next episode.
All right. See ya. Bye.